All right, the time is 3 minutes in the half 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. A very good morning to you, to all the Eagle FM listeners, wherever you're listening us from or tuning in from. Thank you so much for always tuning in and choosing us. So this is early morning scoop, a program that is also diving into the economic news update, entrepreneurship, and of course public policy, and of course the trade. We give you all that, and of course I'm your host Loisa Shimi, and I'll be bringing you just that until the off 7:30. And before I give you that, or to start off with international news, please do not forget to follow us on our social media platforms. Eagle FM Namibia, you find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and of course the Village News web page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And do not forget also to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update, and of course the newspaper alerts. And please do not forget to download our Eagle FM app. You find that on your Google Play Store and of course your App Store. And it's also very advisable, like if you subscribe or download that app, of course you get able to get more advantage of it. Like you can able to tune in, whether you are within the country, whether you are abroad, whether you are at the place where the network is not really that crucial, so you can able to really just tune in. And of course you can able to listen to past shows if you have missed out on some your favorite shows. You can able to tune in, or whether you can able to catch up through the podcast. We have all the podcast ready for you on the app itself. So Eagle FM app, you can able to download that on your, from your Google Play Store and of course your App Store. And do not forget also to download the Imba app. You'll find that on your, whether it's also available on Google Play Store and of course the App Store. Now, to start off internationally, is that the African Space Agency officially inaugurated its headquarters in Cairo, marking the commencement of its operations. Now, the African Space Agency is aimed to drive innovation and collaboration across African space sector by focusing on advancing Earth observation, satellite communication, navigation, and space science. We might take a listen to this update.
Union adopted a continental space policy and strategy. The Africa Space Agency inaugurated its headquarters in the Egyptian capital, Cairo, on Sunday. With this step, the AFSA can finally pursue its mission to harness space science and technology for Africa's socioeconomic development and sustainable development goals.
African ministers, as well as directors of continental and international space agencies, came to the Egyptian space city to celebrate this landmark step for Africa. All of them pledged to support Africa's space ambitions. The European Space Agency marked this historic day by signing several cooperation agreements with the world's newest continental space agency.
The mission of the Africa Space Agency is to collaborate all the space programs in Africa, being it space exploration, Earth observation, astronomy, satellite communications. It's an already existing framework from the African Union, but it has now established on its own. So it's not going to start its work.
The space industry is financially demanding and requires sophisticated technology to run. For Africa, that's still a major challenge. One of the roles of the African Space Agency is to coordinate efforts by national space agencies to complement Africa's space research and capacity building efforts.
We have 54 African nations. All the nations cannot invest heavily in the space sector because investment in space is very, very capital intensive. Coming together in a union like this is the best way to go. Africa is massive landmass. The only way you can manage the resources of Africa and then the diversity of Africa is to use space science and technology. No other means upon which we can do this thing.
China is expected to be one of the main global partners of the African Space Agency. The Egyptian space city has a strong foundation of Chinese space technology, which empowered Egypt with a satellite assembly integration and testing center, as well as expanded the country's remote sensing abilities and space images analysis.
It's quite interesting when you are in space. Most of the geopolitical zones or political is totally different. When you look at the International Space Station, you have all the nations coming together, especially the Americans, the Russians, the Chinese. The role of the China supporting the Egyptian Space Agency and supporting the African Space Agency is a role that is well welcome and is an example for others to follow.
By hosting the African Space Agency, Egypt is solidifying its leadership role in Africa's space ecosystem. It is a commitment from the North African country to nurture space research, technology development, and innovation across the continent. AFSA is not expected to build rocket ships and send humans to space, but will instead focus on Earth observation, satellite communication, navigation, and positioning, as well as other space sciences and astronomy.
All right, there you had it, listeners. Now, to move on to Nigeria, is that Nigerian's government announced a 35% reduction in electricity subsidies. Now, following tariff hikes for major consumers implemented in April last year. Now, while the move has reportedly saved the government millions of dollars, many Nigerians are unhappy as they continue to struggle with higher energy costs and unreliable distribution. We might take a listen to this.
Nigeria raised electricity tariffs for its top users, those on Band A who get at least 20 hours of power supply daily. Rates jumped by 240%. Now, 1 year later, the government says it's saving money. Authorities claim the hike brought in an extra $400 million. That's helped cut annual subsidies by 35% from $2 billion to $1.27 billion. Well, the bigger problem remains Nigeria has generation capacity
of
1,000 megawatts, but barely delivers a third of that. The power grid is outdated, gas supplies are short, and debt in the sector is piling up. Distribution companies say all tariffs couldn't even cover basic costs. Now, debts owed to power generators hit $4 trillion naira, that's over $2.6 billion. Some are threatening to shut down. Despite subsidy cuts, the government still pays about 75% of electricity costs for most people. And for many Nigerians, the pain of higher tariffs hasn't come with better power.
Even with the hike in tariff, we don't get enough supply of light, and it's seriously frustrating.
When the tariff was not even increased, we enjoy light more than this. Now you pay more and you get less light. You've increased tariff. We keep hearing national grid collapse, and it's affecting a lot of businesses around, especially around this area.
Experts say that raising tariffs was necessary to attract investments and ease government's burden. But until supply becomes stable, many see this reform as just another cost without reward.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to South Africa, is that the almost half of the South African population is believed to be either obese or overweight. Now, the Obesity Medicine Association advocates for treatment based on four pillars: nutrition therapy, physical activity, behavioral modification, and of course, medical intervention. Now, for those who choose to manage their weight holistically, it's a long life journey. We might take a listen to this, but we loved it.
Complications that it brings. According to the World Obesity Atlas, 78% of non-communicable disease-related deaths are linked to being overweight and obese, and they occurred in lower and middle-income countries last year. While the WHO recognizes obesity as a disease, there are some academics who disagree with this categorization. The decision to tackle their problematic weight naturally proves that holistic interventions can be effective for some. Ntombi Mongwe decided in December 2022 at 127 kilograms that it was time for a change. Through clean eating and intermittent fasting, she dropped 49 kilograms in a year, a feat which has seen her finally get a hold of the hypertension she's been managing for a decade.
After I lost like too much weight, I went back to my doctor, and then I was doing a regular checkup with my doctor, and then my blood pressure was stable, and then for the period of 3 months, he reduced the strength for the medication to the lower dose, and then I went back after 3 months to check my blood pressure. It was also stable. And then after that, my doctor discontinued me from taking medication, but I'm monitoring my blood pressure on a daily basis here at home. I've got the machine. And since I started the lifestyle of eating healthy and exercising, my blood pressure is stable now.
According to neuroendocrinologist Dr. Giles Yeo of Cambridge University, losing weight is more than just mind over matter.
Your brain, everyone's brain, hates it when they lose weight. It doesn't matter your starting point. You could start from a point where you are athletic versus someone who's not athletic, couch potato type phenotype. The moment you lose a little bit of weight, we're talking even a few pounds. I'm not even talking, you're talking about a stone. Even if you lost 5 pounds, what happens in your brain is your brain is used to you carrying a, you or me carrying a certain amount of weight. The moment your weight starts to go down as an adult, it goes, hey, oh, you know, this is a big flag comes up. This is reducing my chance of survival. This is what the brain thinks. Ah. And so what it does is it begins to use strategies, not conscious, nothing to do with our brain, anything like that, to drag us back up, kicking and screaming to where we were before. First of all, it makes us hungry. Okay. So it makes us hungry. And second, it actually very, very secretively lowers your metabolism ever so slightly. So that even without, even eating exactly the same thing, you are now storing more than you're burning.
Dr. Cleve McIntosh says the key is becoming more conscious about what triggers the hunger, more.
Go big this Easter with extra low prices at WB. Get a 1 kg Yum Yum Peanuts Bread Tub for $59.99. 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken for $74.99 with Smart Buy. 1.8 liter Farmhouse Ice Cream for a sweet $39.99. 1 kg Sunlight Hand Wash Powder for only $33.99. And 8 Twin Saver 300 Sheet 1 Ply Toilet Rolls for $34.99. See all our exciting Easter specials at furmanbrock.com. We care.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Conscious about what you're eating and using tools to build in pauses that give you a moment to connect mind and body.
My experience is that most of my patients know how to eat in healthy ways, and even people who are overweight or obese can often write the textbooks on what's healthy food and what a healthy food plan would look like. They really don't need more information on healthy eating. What they need is a way to respond differently in the situations in which they repeatedly make poor food choices. And they know what those situations are, and they know that they keep making those choices that are self-harming. And yet they often feel powerless to change their automatic response to food. And so what mindful eating does, or bringing mindfulness into making a food choice, is it gives a whole new range of options to someone who before was stuck in a very predictable path of choosing the same food over and over again, even when they didn't want to. By connecting with the feelings, they can take a few steps back from that automatic decision-making process that they've got stuck in and find that they somehow are able to start making choices that is much more consistent with what they want for their weight and for how they want to feel.
All right, there you have it, listeners. Now the time is 17 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and you are still listening to the Early Morning Scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that despite there being an obese epidemic in South Africa, a large number of people are still going hungry. Now it's estimated that at least 15 million South Africans suffer from food insecurity. Now you might take a listen to this particular update.
Fear of insecurity is a little bit of a continuum, right? So, you know, there are those who are chronically hungry. There are those who are seasonally hungry. There are those who are not perhaps having, you know, adequate nutrition, nutritious diet. There are those perhaps who are lacking, you know, food at all. So it becomes, you know, a bit complicated. But think at the core of it, right? When we're looking about that, we are saying as well for a country such as ours, you know, with the kind of upper middle income status it has, the level of indicators, when we look at statistical indicators that we have insofar as zoning in on the well-being, you know, of the populace insofar as their food and nutrition concerns are concerned, right? We realize that South Africa is regressing insofar as the right to food goes. So part of that then is to say, how do we as a country converge together and talk about how we achieve, you know, this idea of a nourishing food system for all?
I mean, then talk to us then about the coexistence of hunger and obesity that we have in South Africa and what it says about our food system.
Yeah, so look, I mean, for what it's worth, what you need to understand about the hunger and obesity interface is that part of it, it speaks to a food system that is not, you know, offering a nutritious sort of value chain for the broader populace. So we have this bifurcation once again within the food system that also speaks to, you know, these broader inequality concerns that we have as a country. And what am I getting at? I'm saying poor people in particular are going to eat that which they can afford. So what we see is that, you know, if you look at the taxi ranks in the morning, we're seeing, you know, this fat cook and coke diet, right, which allows people to, you know, amass this weight gain, but yet it's nutritionally, you know, deficient. So, you know, that's that sort of interface to say, you know, what is available on the shelf life of stores when we're seeing ultra-processed foods, you know, people are eating, you know, sugar-sweetened beverages, you know, things like that. That's that kind of interface that comes with the food system that pretty much does not cater for everybody. And it's stratified as well, according to class. So, you know, we know that a large, you know, percentage of our populace is unemployed. People are landless. So in a context of all of this, how do we grapple with the fact that, you know, we still need people to at least have some sort of access, to basic nutrition, if anything?
You speak of access and what we are finding within our retail stores. How much of targeted marketing of unhealthy food does that play, especially when it comes to those marginalized communities that are facing food insecurity?
Yeah, indeed. It's very, very problematic because, you know, what you're tapping into is this idea of food environment, right? So what we're particularly witnessing in South Africa is this supermarketization, right, of the township in particular. And what that is coming, what that translates to is that, you know, we once again have to then grapple with the political economy of food, right? So what is that which is on offer, you know, in these food stores that are located, you know, in those that are less affluent, and does that fare in comparison with what is, you know, available in the more affluent sort of arenas? But beyond that, also there's the issue of informality here, right? So a large part of a food system is anchored by the informal food system, and what is the interface between, you know, the state and the informal food sector? So what, how are we ensuring that we are also, you know, intervening with that sphere, but also in a way that does not, you know, formalize the informal, but also speaks to the fact that that particular sector can also be part, you know, of this conversation as they're an integral part insofar as ensuring that whatever it is that they have an offer there in these bazaar shops and so forth, that it can also speak to these broader concerns that we have around, you know, a nourishing food system. So it's a very complicated issue. There are a whole range of players that need to come on board, and we all ensure that we find each other and somewhat, you know, have this kind of convergence in terms of how we then tackle this problem moving forward.
And many of those that are affected are our children. How effective are our programs such as the National School Nutrition Program in reducing obesity and ensuring that our children are nourished properly when they get those meals, at least at a school level?
Yeah, so at least, you know, for what it's worth, if we are to zone in on the school nutrition program, for what it's worth, I mean, it does speak to a very sort of like nutritious, basic diet, you know, for the students. But what we must also remember, right, is it's about what takes place around these schools, you know, in terms of that food environment. So what kind of advertising is taking place? Not so long ago, you know, we had a major issue, right, when we recall that, you know, these public-private partnerships where we saw the Minister of Education, Minister Garube, you know, venturing into private-public partnerships that translated to companies like McDonald's, you know, finding themselves into school classrooms and so forth. So these are some of the considerations also often that, you know, we're trying to grapple with, because there's a lot, you know, that the school nutrition program is getting right. But what we must also remember, it's about what happens during the school holidays, what happens on weekends, what kind of diets are our children, you know, being exposed to, but also what kind of advertising and marketing is also being exposed to our children in particular. But the school...
Right, yeah, there you have it. Now, moving on to the next item, is that South African continues tightening their belts as the cost of living continues to soar. Now, education has become very expensive, and this is putting some middle-class homes in debt and default status, while many families struggle to make ends meet. Now, on that, we might take a listen just to this particular update.
That there's more pressure on households, and we're seeing even some parents defaulting on their school fees. Just how bad is it?
Thank you, Michelle. Good afternoon to you and to your viewers. I think that this is an unfolding a crisis in our country, which is caused by a number of other factors. But just to give you the size of the impact, while the exact figures, they vary across institutions, independent schools are currently seeing a default rate of paying school fees between 20 and 25% in some regions, you know, which is up from the previous year. But nonetheless, we do see that also as better than what is happening in the public school sector, where there are schools also which are still charging fees. So with our sector, yes, indeed, it has increased, and we're very concerned about this.
I suppose the issue as well, Mandla, is the fact that school fees have consistently increased over the years, whereas salaries have not.
Yes, indeed. That is very true, very true. When you look at the fact that the growth of salaries has always been linked to inflation, which does not necessarily, I mean, it does not necessarily reflect the ability of parents to pay. At the end of the day, what we see is that parents have to grapple between a number of things. Parents have to decide between buying food, transport, healthcare, you know, mortgages, paying bonds, and school fees. And this alone has meant that parents have had to compromise somewhere. And I'm afraid that school fees have become a victim of this scenario. So there are a number of reasons we can cite here. For example, economic stagnation and job losses have impacted household income adversely over the past years. And at the cost of living itself, the food and fuel cost. Right now, we're looking at the increase of VAT, which alone is going to cause another burden on parents. You know, high debt burdens and interest rates have left families with little discretionary income. So at the end of the day, I think something needs to be done to try and alleviate this pressure on parents.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the increases in food and fuel. We've also just seen an electricity tariff hike of 12.7% come into play in April. It means that, according to one institution called Debt Rescue, many, many people are even resorting now to buying food on credit.
That is increasing. And I'm just worried that we may even find ourselves as a country having food stamps like in America, in some parts of America. But nevertheless, again, inflation-adjusted salary growth has been stagnant, Michelle. You know, it has not grown beyond what we know, 5-6%. You know, in other business sectors, there's been no increase at all because businesses just cannot afford that. So parents are finding themselves in a tight corner. But nevertheless, the other point I want to underscore here is that even government expenditure, government, right now we are told government does not have money. And as a result, we have seen education departments in different provinces in this country unable to pay subsidies to independent schools that qualify for this. Because if you come to understand the sector of independent schooling in our country, you'll realize that there are two kinds of independent schools. There are those which are subsidized by government and those which are not. And the ratio is between 40 and 60%, where 40% is not subsidized and 60% is subsidized by government. So when government does not pay subsidies to independent schools, it forces them to even increase their school fees to make up for the difference. Guess who has to pay for the difference? It's parents.
Yeah. And
all right, there you have it. And just the last update internationally before we get into the local news. We moving on to the South Africa again, or we're staying in South Africa again, whereby as the South African government has been urged to adopt more transformative reforms. Now, this includes moving toward a universal basic income grant that guarantees income security for all speedily. Now, it comes at a time when the social development department has been proposing some changes to the SLD grant. Now, we might take a listen just to this update. But before we get into the update, we can quickly just pay the bills and we can get back to it.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, Dioshierero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwoord Dierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-235-8.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for...
Grant, and of course, public comments have been closed now. There are some views about these particular proposals. Let's now speak to Sianda Baduza, who's a researcher at the Institute of Economic Justice. Sianda, good evening to you, and thank you so much for your time. So there is a view by the Universal Basic Income Grant Coalition that while it welcomes the opportunity for public comment on the proposed regulations, the time was rather limited. You share the sentiments?
Yeah, we definitely do share the same feeling. So just for context, this year, the draft regulations for comment were published on the 25th of March, which was only 1 week before the expiration of the regulations. Whereas in previous years, we had seen the regulations published as early as like mid-February. And what that has meant is that there's been a very short window for consideration and comment. So there's only around 3 weeks provided in order for us to do that. So there's definitely been a closing of the public participation process this time around when it comes to these draft regulations.
And given that then, how confident are you that there could be a meaningful input and discussion when it comes to what needs to happen then going forward? Sianda, are you able to hear us?
So we're definitely hopeful that they can. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, go ahead.
So we're definitely hopeful that that there can be a meaningful engagement this year when it comes to these regulations. But we have submitted comments in the past. We submitted in 2023, we submitted in 2024, and even individual members within the coalition have submitted. And what we've seen in the past is, even though we've raised issues related to these regulations, there haven't been any changes. And I mean, even beyond the public participation process when it comes to draft regulations, we've been very vocal in our advocacy for this social relief of distress grant. So, for example, consider the court case that was towards the end of last year and that judgment that was provided earlier this year, where the High Court essentially agreed with us on essentially every aspect that we brought forward to the court, that those were unlawful and unconstitutional. Those haven't been meaningfully reflected in these regulations at all. So a lot of the problematic things that we've pointed to remain in these regulations, with the only changes really being extremely minor and not really bringing any substantive change. So whether it's going to lead to any meaningful change, we don't have any precedent to believe that to be the case this time around.
And there's a proposal that people should not be rejected based on the answers that they give to questions on the application form. Does this help at all to address some of the concerns that would have been raised about the criteria in order to be able to qualify?
So this is something I think that we do welcome, because this regulation, which essentially meant that there was the application process, which collected information on, say, someone's payment details as well as contact information. But there were also questions that went beyond that, which asked questions that were not necessary for determining whether someone actually qualified for the grant. So, for example, one of these questions was, in the absence of a grant in a particular month, how do you survive? Which essentially like pushes people to admit that they do have alternative means, even if they don't, because there isn't an option to say you starve, for example. And we know.
All right. The time is 34 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop, we're going to a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll take you through the local news update of the day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha with the Kirokabuna e Matina Omjo. Chicago Shafat and Anna Longishifa, yai, she became Oshiwana. E Moyawa, or Tango Botisamuni. Anna Gishifa, Yanamibia, on the Tombanawa or Jika. Faith and Nina Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Okupiramo, Ikelefem Media House. Wait 23 Meneha Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara onkwashi pareki wimo po yomo programa detu moambo dengera selma kodara heta tuimu datunda tu heari hamano tano o diage Eagle FM the eye.
Right, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us right now. And if you just joined us, thank you so much and a very good morning to you out there. Now, to start off locally, is that the International Energy Agency released a report that indicated previously unknown dimensions regarding the role that artificial intelligence can play in the broader energy economics of the world. Now, artificial intelligence has the potential to transform the energy sector in the coming decade, now driving a surge in electricity demand from data centers around the world, while also unlocking significant opportunity to cut costs, enhance competitiveness, and reduce emissions. That's what the report said. Now, Faith Barrow, the executive director of the agency, said that AI has been the buzz term for the past few years, and that no one has really understood that what the impact would be on the energy ecosystems. Now, AI, it's one of the biggest stories in the energy world today, but until now, policymakers and, of course, market lacks the tools to fully understand the wide-ranging impacts. That was what he said. Now, global electricity also demand from data centers is set to more than double over the next 5 years, consuming as much electricity by 2030 as the world of Japan does today. Now, the effects will be particularly strong in some countries. Now, for example, in the United States, data centers are on course to count for almost half of the growth in electricity demand. Now, in Japan, more than half, and in Malaysia, as much as 1/5. Now, the report emphasized the significant uncertainty that remain from the microeconomic outlook to how quickly AI will be adapted. It also notes a question over how capable and productive AI will become, how fast efficiency improvement will occur, and of course, whether bottlenecks in the energy sector can be resolved. Now, according to the report, AI has multiple applications that can improve efficiency and, of course, more regarding the new energy needs that are to be forecasted. AI has numerous applications that can improve efficiency, reduce costs, and drive innovation. Example including faster, cheaper, and more accurate weather forecasting for predicting the output of wind and solar photovoltaic plant, and of course real-time monitoring and optimization of transmission lines, and of course the use of AI to discover new batteries chemistries. Now, the report, the other drawback of AI has been in its huge thirst or hunger for energy is that the data centers that host AI modules requires a lot of energy. Now, at the same time, the AI is also energy intensive. Globally, data centers consumed around 1.5% of electricity consumption in the 2024. Now, AI is only one of the range of workloads that data centers perform, but in anticipation of growing demand for AI related services, investment in data centers is growing rapidly, and the size of the largest data centers is also increasing. Now, the report also explained that the role of the data service and of course the infrastructure are becoming ever more critical in the economic for tomorrow. Now, in terms of power draw, a conventional data centers might be around 10 to 25 megawatts in size, and a hyperscale AI focused data center can have a capacity of 100 megawatts or more, consuming as much electricity annually as 100,000 households. Now, AI focused data centers are increasing in size to accommodate larger and larger modules and growing demand for AI services. Now, those analysis highlights the growing role that the power plays as a crucial element for the successful usage of AI, and the important focus of AI-based needs will command from an economy. Now, the IEA notes that the historical installation of data centers has been designed to be placed in external areas in territories, and of course that they have also presented issues to power grid. Now, historically, data centers have been highly concentrated in the parcel terms, proposing also significant challenges to local grids, giving their substantial power draw. Now, that what also the report adds. Now, this has also led to instances where in the regions where data centers are concentrated, the share of electricity demand going to data centers is disproportional high. Now, in Ireland, for example, data centers consumed around 20% of the meters electricity supply, why there are six states in the United States where data centers already consume over 10% of the electricity supply, while Virginia leading at 25%. The agency also indicated that the deployment of those data centers will also place burden on the grids in closer approximately to urban settlements. Now, on this, my colleague David Chombe engaged Aaron Indongo, who spoke about artificial intelligence and, of course, its potential integration into academia and, of course, business. Okay, he also highlighted the effectiveness of AI in enhancing productivity and, of course, efficiency. Additionally, he also discussed how Namibia can take advantage of technological opportunities instead of also fueling the change. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at development in artificial intelligence. We are tracking the background of artificial intelligence, and we are also looking at the ways how can artificial intelligence can be used for economic development, and also for this, development in high tech be used for, advanced Namibia education system. What are the pros and cons? First, to engage us in this matter, we are joined by Aaron Indongo, who is a expert in the area of, computer science and also technical related matters. Aaron Indongo, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Dave.
Yes, let us go back and track the progress of AI for the past 3 years, because there are new developments, there are new, views, new contradictions. But where are we, taking us back to the past 3 years to where we are now in terms of development within, technology, particularly in terms of AI and robotics?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dave. In those years, even before now AI, we already been trying to make some changes, but the big impact came after the AI was introduced in our society, in our continent, in our country, and also in our community. So because even 3 years back, I can even start in 2022, whereby one of the smartest tools, smartest tools for AI, like ChatGPT, when was introduced, it can talk and also it can write like a human.
Yeah.
So meaning that most of people starting to make use of the AI, that smartest tools to document their thing, to align their thing. And the most of the thing, we're going perfect, and it was also saving the time, not spending a lot of time documenting and making a mistake. It was very easy and make everything a progress. And again, even in 2023 and 2024, many business and school, they start also, start using in AI, some of the AI tools.
Okay.
As I said, one of it was smartest AI, which is ChatGPT for making, research. Business, they start using that one. You know, we have Google already.
Yeah.
But if you make a research through Google, Google will give you many, many things where you have to click on it and analyze the information that you are looking for.
Yeah.
But if because of AI, which is like smartest one, ChatGPT, you just prompt chat and then you ask, how can you start a business in Namibia?
Mm-hmm.
All the steps or how can improve my income if I'm selling, this product. All the step and everything you already get, meaning that the development and the making a research is already going well within that 3 past years that we have.
Yeah. Aaron, let us look at AI and business development. Let us look at Namibia. What are the opportunities and also challenges in using AI in the business world?
Yeah. Okay. The biggest challenge is that the most challenge is that people are not trained to use the AI, so they need to be trained. That's the most challenge that people, we have now AI,
Yeah.
We understand what AI do, but we don't know how to use an AI. So it's a challenge. It need to be addressed by training those people. Like, you need to make use of AI like this. I remember one of my friends was giving the feedback of, I asked, tell me the feedback of when you're using the AI. How is it? He gives me like, I know AI is giving you, fake information and I don't like to use it. He said, no, the thing is that you don't know how to prompt AI. You don't know how to ask AI. Mm-hmm. The moment you ask with the wrong information, that information that you feed AI, the outcome, it will be the same again. Mm-hmm. But if you ask, like, I want to do this and this and this, what must I do? We'll give you the good suggestion and the good information because you know how to prompt. So that's one of the challenges that we need to train our people. And another one is that job loss in the market. You know, some of the, manufacturing and other industries, they are bringing the automated machine instead of now manual work to be done by people.
Yeah.
So now the people, they are going to lose the job because the machine will cut everything. You just instruct the machine that, okay, you must cut this this meter in square meter of what and what in rounded angle or something like that, and then that machine will do the same. So now, but in past year, long time ago, that was the job for the worker to do, to make sure that, okay, he make a measurement, take a measurement, and he cut the that metal. But because of the automated AI automated machine of cutting metal,
job is going to be lost. Yes, continue.
Yeah, but on other hand, for the benefit,
it's
saving a time, which is a good thing. In business, it's about time.
Yeah.
When you are using your time efficiently, it means that your production is also improving. Because imagine now you're making a research within a short period, and then you get a result, and then you start executing your task or everything that you are trying to do. Or now imagine you were instructing your employee to make sure that you must take the accurate measurement to cut that metal, and cut the metal again, this and this.
Yeah.
But, and sometimes it can even take a day now.
Yeah.
Now the people, they are just there in the workshop, making a measurement and everything, marking where they're going to cut tomorrow. But because of AI, you are no more going to mark. You just put the metal there, and then you instruct the automated machine that I want this one, the metal, it must be longer for this metal and something like that. And then the automated machine will cut exactly the way you instructed.
Yes, Aaron, last question. Let us look at AI and education. How can we integrate AI into our education system and use it to our advantage?
It is very easy to do it nowadays, and it's very effective in also improving our education system. With especially now we have a flood. Some of the schools, they are already closed.
Yeah.
But there are some AI tools that you can even use without not having a data.
Uh-huh.
Like DeepSeek tools, you can make use of that one, and then you what you need, you just to train your student or your learner how to make use of it. And then they're starting getting already private tutor from that side, or even the teacher themselves, they started already make use of AI for time management.
Mm-hmm.
That they can plan with making use of that AI tool for the time management. It even giving more suggestions that, okay, if now your curriculum, you need to complete your curriculum or the content of curriculum within this time frame, you need to start with this one. And if now your students, they are struggling with this a certain topic, so the good approach of this one, you make use of this and use this of this. So it's giving more innovative suggestion that the teacher can make use of it, so that you can give a good content, and then the student will pass without not struggling like those days.
You know, so thank you very much, Aruna Indongo, and thank you very much for your input.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dave.
All right, there you heard from Aaron, whereby he just really just rather raise or emphasize the awareness when it comes to the AI. So that, I mean, the way that he said, he don't, that does not really think that we all know how to use the AI. And then he really just suggested that maybe the education or the awareness need to go out there so that at least we can know how to use or how best we can use the AI. Now, also on that, my colleague David Chombe also spoke to, Philip Hikuma, about the development of artificial intelligence and of course its impact on human lives, whereby he just discussed all the effects of AI on agriculture and of course work, as well as the potential to improve the education system. We might take a listen to this particular update also.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at economic development, particularly when we are looking at advancement in technology. It was indicated that in the first pace moving world, artificial intelligence is taking a center stage in developed and also in developing countries. But there are also different pros and cons of artificial intelligence when it's coming to economic development and also the direction of education. Today in the studio, we are joined by one of the experts in the area of, you know, information technology, in the areas of computer science, just to engage us in that platform and also to give us some input, particularly when it's coming to development of artificial intelligence. Today, we are joined by Mr. Philip Hikuma, just to give us some information regarding to that. Mr. Philip, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Mr. Shombe. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. Yes, let us go to it. Let us look at artificial intelligence. Let's look at in the past 3 years, what are some of the new development in terms of, you know, advancement in technology? And how are these things affecting the way human beings are living, either in terms of at personal level, business, and also governance?
Mr. Shombe, artificial intelligence is one of the core sectors which is propelling the economy and propelling the livelihood of any citizen in the world now.
Yeah.
Be it in advanced country or be it in developing country. And yes, for the past 3 years, we have really made some good strengths. Mm-hmm. In the whole development and aspect. And if you notice that equally in Namibia, our population in terms of the demographics,
yeah,
you know that most of the population is a younger group.
Yeah.
And it's a younger group that is really absorbing this technology, and they are grasping very well, even though the upper youth generation is also catching up.
Mm-hmm.
Even though artificial intelligence was looked at in a gray color, where people were, you know, a little bit resistant, thinking that no, it's coming to everything is going to be digitized, and with this whole high unemployment rate in terms of youth, it will be difficult to, you know, to balance.
Yeah.
But, yes, the signs are showing now.
Yeah.
That yes, it's capacitating industries, it's capacitating trade.
Yeah.
It's capacitating, productivity.
Yeah.
On the personal level, you have platforms where you can, virtually either view an object, or virtually you can do a tour in a certain say, for example, in a tourism industry, you can do a tour,
yeah,
virtual tour, maybe in a certain lodge or in a certain amusement park.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a grist and it prepares you that when you get to that amusement park, that is what you are expecting to view. So it prepares you, your psychological aspect of what you are expecting as a customer.
Okay.
Equally as well in the marketing aspect, the big change that you do, the moment you walk into the shop and you get to an aisle of, if it's a vegetable shop, you get to an aisle of an apple.
Yeah.
It starts calculating and see how many people are going to the aisle of an apple. If the aisle of the apple is behind the shop,
yeah,
then it will it will give data intelligence to the shop manager to say that move that aisle of the apples in front of the door,
yeah,
because most of your customers are looking for apples so they can quickly pick and pay,
mm-hmm,
and you can earn more revenues. So with regards to agriculture, we have seen good trades, artificial intelligence really helping in Namibia,
yeah,
helping. I'm so much excited for the school in Stamford, which is a high school which is even teaching artificial intelligence but focusing on agricultural aspect, which wants to grow to become a college and tertiary education as a VTEC at the end of the day.
Yes.
And those are good initiatives as a country. With regards to the education sector, yes, we have the platforms. It's readily available for us as a country.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to wait for November, October so that we can pick up a newspaper or dial a certain short code to see if our grade 10 or grade 11 or grade 12 has passed well.
Yeah.
We can start using this technology to start testing, rapid testing, on the spot so that the Ministry of Education can gauge and say, look, this, we are ready to take the final examinations or not.
Mm-hmm.
And such types of tutorials, engagements with the learners can also be implemented using artificial intelligence. The issue is we have to develop our own content.
Mm-hmm.
And developing our own content means that we need to have trained people on the ground. And to train, you must start as early as possible, even if we start training from grade zero or grade double zero, and have an exposure for the generation to grow up with computation of this data into a manner that can be very productive for the nation.
Yes,
we are in an era where we think that no, we will be as this technology is from Asia or this technology is from Europe.
Mm.
But Europe as well has also started from the younger age. So we are encouraging that the country and the nation and individual families must encourage their young ones to partake into these activities on a daily basis.
Yes, maybe the last question is also we have seen some of the good opportunities and also some of the advantages there. But what are some of the challenges that are brought by AI, and also how can we navigate this in order for us to move ahead in terms of our development and also to integrate this into our daily system?
Bit of an disadvantage of AI, I think policymakers, we just have now the new Parliament, which has been now constituted,
yeah,
and I'm really encouraging the lawmakers to start looking at how to regulate this whole sector of artificial intelligence,
yeah,
with regards to the open platform, because these are open platforms, and open platforms means that the sharing of information is also open.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm on that platform, it means that information can also end up somewhere where it's also not warranted to be, which is costing other evils, like cyber crime, mm-hmm, cyber security breaches, and all the cyber ills, mm-hmm, the isms.
Mm-hmm.
So, those are the aspects that we have to look at in terms of regulating. I'm very confident that, the current ACE Parliament,
yeah,
Is well capacitated to drive those policies and legislation to be in place so that the whole nation can be protected. Apart from the plagiarism aspect of it, with regards to AI, a person wants to write a letter, the computer is automatically generating the letter and all these things. Yes, it makes people lazy. Yes, it makes people dependent. But equally as well, as the technology is also, you know, maturing, I think, those auto-generated, letters, or we are hearing now, the people are even, submitting thesis which are generated by AI and becoming, earning, titles of doctors or professors or whatever that you might call. Yeah. So, but the technology is also maturing, and surely, you know, we'll have dates, we'll have stamp, you know, digital stamps to with regards to creativity, because, you know, that is also a bridge of creativity, because if I'm a writer, that's my talent. And my talent is my creativity, and I'm supposed to benefit from my talent. It's my intellectual property. Mm-hmm. So, we'll start, and it's negating, the AI is negating talent and creativity. So, I think when it's maturing, and, that whole aspect in terms of the standards, or the international standard of stamping that this, text was generated by an AI, for the purpose of communication, but not really to encourage that, it should bring the person's own creativity. Mm-hmm. So I think the technology will move to that, in that aspect, in that direction. And surely soon we will get to that aspect.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Philip. Thank you very much for your input, and thank you for being with us this morning.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Shombe, and I encourage you as well to use AI, in your studio, and yes, also assist. Yes. Soon the interview, you don't have to be in the studio, you can be somewhere else, and there can be an automatic interview.
Somebody will interview you without a name.
Yes, with a good sense of humor. But at the end of the day, you know, it's helping. With regards to service delivery, look, I mean, I can call any service delivery, and automatically at night I can be assisted, and issues can be sorted out.
Sure, indeed. Thank you.
All right, there you have it. The time is 4 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We can get into a very short commercial break, and once we get back, we'll take a listen to more of the local updates.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, Rio Sherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics Imane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level.
Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha with the Kirokabuna e Matina Omjo. Chikao Shafa Sanana, Longishifa, Yai, Shuikemoshiwana, E Moyao, or Tango Gotisamuni. Ana Gishifa Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangika. Saithanina Omeguro,
all right, the time is 7 minutes in the half 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. I'll be with you until the half 7:30. Now, to move on to the next item is that the total assets of Namibia, Namibians non-bank financial institutions reach 474.1 billion Namibian dollars by the end of December 2024. Now, bringing the sector just a few million dollars shy of the half a trillion mark and nearly three times the size of the country's economy. Now, according to the Namibia Financial Institution Supervisory Authority, that's NAMFISA, a quarterly report for 2024, the sector expanded by 14 million Namibian dollars in the final quarter of the year, making a 2.9% quarter-to-quarter increase from the third to the fourth quarter. Now, the non-bank financial institutions includes the long-term insurance, short-term insurance, friendly societies, medical aid funds, common monetary areas, pension funds, corrective investment schemes, and micro-renting. Now, by the end of 31 December 2024, the NAMFISA has registered a total of 1,027 entities and 14,701 intermediary. Now, the non-bank financial institution now are a part of the secondary sector, and they also contributed to 11 billion Namibian dollars to the economy last year. Now, the non-bank financial institution, the amount of money saved on or put away by the individual and, of course, companies to cover unforeseen events or risk. Now, representing the country's saving or capital pool, this is the money entrepreneurs and, of course, those running project borrow to fund their work. Now, on that again, the non-bank financial institutions allocate the saving to asset managers who allocate the capital and saving to economic agents looking for funding through special vehicles and others. Now, the 474.1 billion Namibian dollars is now the capital available looking for growth avenues within Namibia's economy and externally. Now, in Namibia, there are regulations that requires a certain percentage of the total savings, now domestic asset requirement, to be invested in the country or in Namibia. Now, in terms of the investment management sector that gets capital from the various institutions that receive the country savings by the end of December 2024, they had 277.3 billion Namibian dollars that were managing and allocating. Now, representing a 4.6% quarter-on-quarter increase and, of course, 16.2% year-on-year increase in assets under management. Now, this growth can be attributed to interest income and dividend earning from existing investment. Now, most of the country's saving came from the retirement funds industry assets, which stood at 254.80 billion Namibian dollars as of 30 September 2024. Now, following by the long-term insurance industry assets that grew to 82.5 billion Namibian dollars, marking an increase of 1.9% quarter on quarter and 14.1% year on year during the period under review. Now, according to NAMFISA, the overall expansion of this growth was supported by the economic stabilizing and sorry, stabilization and, of course, positive financial marking a momentum. Now, in 2024, Namibia non-financial institutions, including the pension funds, insurance companies, and, of course, venture capital firms, are becoming significant financial drivers with total assets reaching $474 billion. Now, my colleague Zafia Basun interviewed economist, in Emmanuel Erastus, who explained also the role those institutions play in fostering economic growth through long-term investment and infrastructure, education, and of course local business. We might take a listen to what Emmanuel has to say on this regard.
Good morning, Mr. Erastus. How are you doing?
Yes, we're doing great, ma'am. So good morning to you.
Thank you. So total assets of non-financial institutions reached asset value of $474 billion in Namibia. These institutions, such as insurance companies and venture capitals, reach a huge amount of asset values and are bigger than the country's economy. What are their contributions to the country's development?
Yeah. If you look at the financial sector, actually in terms of contribution, the financial sector is actually the biggest. The financial sector is actually the biggest in terms of contribution to GDP.
Mm.
But in terms of these now, is how whatever they have, the savings, whatever they got from medical aid, whatever they got from insurance. Remember, I'm just contributing. I just own a car. Or I just own whatever I own and I pay insurance.
Mm.
And remember, I'm paying this every month. And if I don't get in anything, that money keep to be, to get to accumulate. Now when it accumulates, the key question is here that, okay, cool. When it's accumulating, where does the insurance company keep this money? That is the key question. Yes, in terms of contribution, the financial sector in the main economy is the biggest. But the savings that they have, the savings that they receive from us for insurance or for medical or for retirement or for whatever, where do they keep it? Where do they invest it? That's the key question. How does that money translate to be used in the Namibian economy? Because we can't be bragging about how big the saving we have. And remember, they are like literally, they're almost just 51 million, or if I'm not mistaken, away from half a trillion. That's a lot of money, ma'am. And that is almost 3 times as the Namibian GDP. So we got to interrogate, like, where is this money? Where does this money get to be kept? Where do you invest this money? What is their contribution? So that's why now the spotlight is on this amount itself.
Mm-hmm. How significant are the savings to Namibia's journey towards sustainable economic development?
No, it's definitely very significant because, remember, you got to have capital. If you look at the South African economy, it depends on debt, meaning they borrow. They borrow from elsewhere. But now, it's very important when you are borrowing locally or domestically, because you don't get to pay the exchange rate. You don't get to owe other countries. And when you do not owe other countries, nobody influences your stock exchange or how things are moving in your country. If I can give you a good example is that, As soon as Trump made some decisions, look at what happened to the South African Stock Exchange. Because South Africa relies so much on external debt.
Mm.
So any decision that they make domestically for their own interest, it can drive away investor. People can start selling their bonds and things like that. Because those people are not from inside. But when you borrow inside, it's very, very important. Nobody will sell the bonds compared to external, because you know why the decision has been made. So the significance is that we got now a capital pool. We got capital pool or money available that we can actually extend to bankable and feasible projects that are aligning or that are contributing to our economic building journey or to our climate change efforts and things like that. And that is the most important thing, because, look, our government is always running a budget deficit. The private sector need money. And I think in the past, we relied on the commercial banks.
Mm.
But in many cases, when it comes to commercial banks, when it comes to loans, loans are very expensive. Now, we have projects that require some sort of like equity and other different types of financial products, but they are not available at the banks. So having such a capital around, it really, really gives comfort that even me, if I come up with a good project, there is capital available that's looking for growth avenue in Namibia. So that is the most important thing. So meaning that I do not have to go to the South African Stock Exchange. I do not have to go to America. I do not have to look for an investor. No, because capital is available in Namibia. Even our government itself, because every time they have a budget deficit of around 12 billion, just between 10 and 15 billion. So every time there is capital around for them to borrow, no need to go to external and face exchange rate fluctuations and other volatility that are happening in the market. So it's really, really, really important, because it gives an alternative to the commercial banks. It gives a comfort to those that are looking for equity type of financing. So man, what we need to do is just to make sure that that money is invested in the domestic economy. Mm. Yeah.
Finally, are there any regulations that allow these institutions to invest back into the Namibian people, and how?
Yeah, it's, and this is one of, actually, I keep saying that this is one of the most important thing that we did as a country.
Mm.
We have what we call domestic asset requirements. And this is all for asset managers, pension funds, and also reinsurance. We have some domestic laws that require you that a certain percentage of all that pension fund, of all assets or financial assets in management, that they should be invested in the country. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, at this particular point, we have a 45% rule to say that whatever Namibian people are saving, whether it's on whatever Namibian people are saving in terms of medical aid, insurance, pension funds, reinsurance and others, we should try by all means to invest 45% of that asset in a domestic economy. Why is that important? Because remember, like what I said earlier, if a capital is available for me to borrow cheaply, I would do crazy project to grow the Namibian economy.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is no capital available, if there is no alternative from the commercial banks, because the commercial banks are not risk takers compared to pension fund, compared to asset managers, because the asset manager's capital is more a bit patient. It can wait. You know, it can come in form of equity and other things. But when it comes to commercial bank capital, it comes in form of a loan. As soon as I get that money, I'm already paying interest. And even if my project is going to take longer to materialize, I have to pay interest. But if you compare it to the asset manager type of capital or the other saving capital, it doesn't work like that, because they can come through equity, they can come through other various type of financial innovation, and they are more patient, meaning they are able to wait for me and for my project to materialize. And if we can dedicate a significant amount of that capital to the Namibian economy, I think it would be great, because we have a lot of young people, we have a lot of entrepreneurs, we are at a space or at a stage where entrepreneurship is becoming a thing. Me and you and me and a lot of people are trying out.
Mm.
Many of the rural community are now actually starting to understand that you can actually do something great in your village. So all these components, it come back to capital. How much is available? How much of the capital is available? And if there's no available capital, and if it's expensive, and if it's not patient, then you expect most of this project not to materialize. Because many of our people, many of our entrepreneurs, many of our companies, they do not have access to African Development Bank. They do not have access to the South African Stock Exchange. They do not have access to the New York Stock Exchange. So they rely on domestic capital. And if it's not available, and if we didn't change the laws or the regulation that we have in place to say we want a certain percentage of the Namibian savings to be invested in Namibia. So that gives some sort of comfort to me. Remember, I'm contributing to my pension fund.
Mm.
I know I want my pension fund to grow. I want, when I retire, 1 million. But it's very important. Where is that money being invested? where is it being invested? Because you are giving $5. Now the key question is that, who is taking your $5? Because remember, when you are availing money to the UK people, when I'm investing this money into the UK market, the USA market, I'm literally giving them capital to grow their economy. So there is a mindset to say that we wanted this $5 to be available to Namibian people, regardless of the sector where they are, regardless of whatever project they're doing, as long as it's bankable and it's feasible, then, man, we should be able to have capital of our own without relying on foreign market to provide. So that is the significance of having such a domestic capital requirement where a certain amount of our saving need to be retained, need to be invested in the Namibian economy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Erastus, and have a good day.
All right, ma'am.
Thank
Same
you.
To you.
Good.
All right.
All right, there you had it. Then, you know, Mino just highlighted that our savings are crucial for enhancing financial stability and, of course, advancing national development objectives. Although there are regulatory frameworks in place to guide the investment of those funds, so, you know, Mino pointed out that the need to strengthen policies to ensure a greater portion of this capital is also reinvested in Namibian communities now with the proper governance and strategic planning, and of course those institutions have the potential to significantly influence a more inclusive and of course prosperous economic future for the nation. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the 90-day extension was given in alleged anti-competitive case involving Ultimate Safaris Limited, Doro Ngawe's Conservancy, and of course Albertson T. Fontaine Conservancy, and of course Soares Conservancy. Now, the Namibian Competition Commission and the Ministry of Environment, Forest and Tourism announced that this follows an investigation into alleged anti-competitive conduct involving exclusive agreements between the parties. Now, the Commission confirmed that the extension will allow for further engagement between the two institutions to determine a manually beneficial resolution to the matter. Now, the decision comes after the Commission advised the conservancies in January 2025 to consider terminating the exclusive agreements, and of course confirm in writing that they had ceased the conduct within 30 days. Now, the Commission had cautioned that failure to comply would trigger enforcement under Section 33 of the Competition Act No. 2 of 2003. Now, a 90 days extension was given in alleged anti-competitive anti-competitive. Now, despite the collaboration approach, the Commission maintained that the exclusive agreement in question restrict competitive, and of course might be in a violation of the Act of that Act of 2003, or rather the Act No. 2 of 2003. Now, our position remained that the agreement is still a competition. Now, that was the Kawasab that said or remarks. Now, in consensus is not reached within the, whether if it's not now, or if the consensus is not reached within the 90 days window, now the Commission reserves its right to further scrutinize the conduct. Now, the Commission said it is also committed to reaching a solution that balances the principle of environmental stewardship with fair market practices. Now, that was the update that we are also giving you there. So we can just take quickly a break, and once we return, we would also take you through the another update of the day. Do not go away.
Omudiha with the Kirokaguna e Matina Omjo. Chikao Shafasa Nana Longishifa Yai Shuita Moshiwana. E Moyawa Otaingo Samwini. Anagashifa Yanamibia Ombijombanawa Omjika.
Faith Anina Omeaguro Mirandi Toma Yue Yongeshi Fayo Kupitiramo Ikelefem Media House Ngwe 20 Memeha Uka Kombanga Nina Kara Omkwashi Pareki Wimopo Yomo Programa Detu Moambo Dengira Selma Konaraje Tatuimu Datunda Tu Heari Hamano Tano Omiyaji Ikelefem The Eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually... to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
Time is 28 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. So we have about 2 minutes to hand over to my colleague, Dr. Michael Shabu, to take you through the unpacking of the day of today. And, of course, thank you so much for tuning in. And before I give the mic, please do not forget to follow us on social media pages, Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village News Bar page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And, of course, do not forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for daily news update and, of course, newspaper alerts. And, of course, you should not forget to ask for the newspaper. All you have to do is just to send through your detail to 081 081-241-44, that's the number you can save so that we can always get the newspaper. That's on a Monday, Wednesday, and of course Friday. And do not forget also to download our app. We have Eagle FM app that you can find on your Google Play Store and of course the App Store. And that you can have, or you can also be having now, the newspaper every day. It's released as Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And do not forget to also download our app. That's the Imba app and, of course, Eagle FM app. And you can able also to listen to your past show, your favorite past shows that you missed out. You can able just to tune on from the Eagle FM app, wherever you are, you can able to listen through the app. We have already lined up of the podcast. You can just tune in. And from Little Lisa Shimi, it's a good day. We will just, rather hear from Tate Michael Shaveri what he has for us this beautiful, Tuesday. From Lisa, it's a good day.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics Maneka Karunga, the Afrikaans Selfwar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0638. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kagona I matina omjo. Chikawa shafasa na nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongo tisamwene. Anage shifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoye yonge shifa yoyo kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende timeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa zetu. Moambo dengera selma kodara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oni aj. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Either a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views,